Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Pioneer Natural Resources to sponsor 9 school pantries. The West Texas Food Bank is excited to announce a partnership with Pioneer Natural Resources to fund 9 school pantries in 5 school districts across the basin. Pioneer has committed funds which will stock the 9 school pantries for an entire year. A ceremony highlighting the partnership between Pioneer Natural Resources and the West Texas Food Bank will take place at 2:30 p.m. today at South Elementary, 200 West Dakota Avenue in Midland, today, October 12th. Supporting food pantries within our local school is one of the most impactful ways to reach families in need and serve the communities in which we live and work, Scott Sheffield, CEO of Pioneer Natural Resources, said in a news release. We are proud to partner with the West Texas Food Pantry and help grow the Food to Kids program, a collection of 23 schools in 8 independent school districts operate pantries in partnership with the West Texas Food Bank. These pantries are part of the West Texas Food Bank's Food to Kids program and are open to students and their families. Through the years, Pioneer Natural Resources has been a generous partner to the West Texas Food Bank, Libby Campbell, CEO of the West Texas Food Bank, said in the release. With this donation, Pioneer is really solidifying their commitment to supporting the communities where they live and work. I am so grateful for their continuing partnership. More information about participating school districts and how to get food from the West Texas Food Bank is available at atwtxfood-bank.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 9th, 2021. Viewpoints. Questions for the candidates. How do we pay for park upgrades? When does it come at the expense of other priorities? Dan Corrales, at-large candidate. Let's explore other options for funding. As a child, I remember Dennis the Menace Park fondly with its ever-present lion standing guard for the children. As a dad who spends a great deal of time at parks with my son, the value of green space isn't lost on me. Restoration of Dennis the Menace Park's glory helped me understand how revitalizing it was to our community in a variety of ways. Increasing my son's physical activity, especially after a churro cookie, is always a plus for a generation that prefers being glued to their phone. Having a safe place for our children to spend time at that's appealing to them is a no-brainer. The water features transport us to an oasis in our desert. Sibley and I-20 are a bit different in that they help my wife, son, and I reconnect with nature that is also foreign to many these days. As a sports lawyer, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the importance of tournament venues for our athletes to thrive in their pursuit of competition that builds bonds that can last a lifetime. Parks play a vital role in improving public health. All of the things I mentioned are vital, but they also cost money. As a business owner, a profit and loss statement and balance sheet aren't a foreign concept. Our beloved city has a finite amount of resources, tax revenue, and it would seem there is an unlimited number of expenditures to provide all that wonder for our children and grandchildren. This isn't anything new, as I suspect our city council that opened Dennis the Menace Park in 1959 asked the same questions. How do we fund this? How do we maintain it? How long will it last, depending on what we invest in its construction? Over time, we've witnessed the degradation of some parks due to budget constraints. City government is tasked with the great responsibility of keeping our city running and keeping constituents happy at the same time. A former city council member asked me during this campaign, "If you succeed in doing this, tell me how." There are a number of ways to fund parks. The easiest, raising taxes by a vote of the city council. However, the recent cap on how much they can be raised without taking it to the polls for voters to approve makes that a challenge. When you hit an obstacle, it's wise if you don't just hit the gas. Sometimes you have to get creative and circumvent it. I applaud the efforts that brought us Centennial Park and the public-private partnership that helped bring in private investment to turn what was a courthouse into Midland's green jewel, a newly cut emerald that shines downtown. There is a stage and infrastructure that provide fertile space for public and private events and has the potential for unprecedented revenue streams that previously only existed in the form of a law infraction. This park and the Bush Convention Center have the potential, quickly being realized, to serve as an anchor for downtown development. This worked, but it's not representative of our existing parks, such as Dennis the Menace. Those parks were meant to be freely open for the public to enjoy without generating revenue, a constant expenditure. What lies behind us are parks designed to cost money. What lies before us is whether parks in the future will be the same. They can be funded with property tax, a bond, sales tax, privately funded, a public-private partnership, or they can generate revenue and be self-funded, or at least partially. We aren't redesigning the wheel. The GI Bill helped me pursue college in many different places, from my time in Europe, Africa, the Middle East, South America, and the Caribbean. One universal understanding was that park space is essential to a healthy quality of life. Each of those places funded parks in their own way. But anyone in Midland will tell you what works somewhere else, well, that doesn't mean it'll work here in West Texas. Privately funded and privately maintained. Anyone who has been to Chris Davidson Opportunity Park will tell you the philanthropy of Midland makes miracles happen. The land was donated by the Henry Foundation, and donors helped fund a $3 million park accessible to children with special needs. That was made possible by the tireless efforts of Steve and Jan Davidson in memory of their son. Every park in Midland would not be able to be handled this way. Anyone who serves on a nonprofit board of directors is all too familiar with donor fatigue. Financed, bond and sales tax funded parks. In my day, high school football games were played at Memorial, but today we have the Scarborough Sports Complex, a marvelous full-service baseball park, football and soccer stadium with a pavilion for concerts and other shows. I can't complain. Our family enjoys watching a ball game, and my son loves the train and splash pad. Best part about it is that it was paid off early and for nearly $18 million less due to the wisdom of the council to refinance the debt when the opportunity presented itself. The city paid $65.4 million in principal and interest in the form of two bonds that initially were approved for $35.9 million in 2000 and $2.5 million in 2001, and paid it back via the 4B sales tax. Public-private partnership. I've already mentioned Centennial and why I think it's a great park, particularly its location downtown, and ability to drive the economic revitalization of downtown. This is a bit different in that the land belonged to the county. It is not a city park. It is operated and maintained by the Midland Downtown Park Conservancy, which is a nonprofit organization. According to MDC's website, the park was estimated to cost $15 million, with $8 million coming from the Scarber Foundation, and another $3 million was the responsibility of Tim Leach, the CEO of Concho. As I said, miracles in Midland are made with providence and philanthropy. The conclusion is that we don't have to raise property taxes or divert funds away from other necessities to have parks that improve our quality of life. We as a community, as taxpayers, need our city government to explore what's been done before and present constituents with the best way to move forward. That is the heavy weight of being on the council. It's your job to figure out how to lead the city in the right direction based on what voters want. They don't want higher property taxes. So let's explore other options. Questions for the candidates. How do we pay for park upgrades? When does it come at the expense of other priorities? Dustin Johnson, at-large candidate. Listen and lead. That will improve parks. I feel like if we can listen to our community on what they feel is necessary for the parks. For example, as I've been able to explain, I helped get the process started to begin getting bids for concrete benches and a water bottle filling station, which is amazing. If we had a team of leaders for City Council and would listen to those communities, we will be successful in improving the parks as they feel would most benefit them. Happier townspeople and better communication leads to improvements and more likelihood for groups to come together to do fundraisers to help assist in renovations, if at all possible. If we make people feel involved, they have more appreciation for the facilities they have. I don't feel we need to upgrade our parks at the expense of other necessities. It needs to be balanced more and better planned out so we don't waste money on things which I think we don't need. Robin Poole, at-large candidate. Planning can help city meet priorities. For generations, cities looked to their economic standing in gauging whether or not they were succeeding. Midland was no different. Job creation, income and wages, the number of corporate oil and gas companies moving into town, and the price of oil dominated conversations concerning the success of our city. However, as Midland has weathered multiple booms and busts, people have been sticking around, and our population continues to grow. Midland finds itself in a new era where the quality of life within our city walls has become an important barometer in distinguishing our true success. Young adults moving here to start a career want to make sure there are things to do. Families with children want state-of-the-art sports facilities. Young and old alike want amenities that offer entertainment and ambience that doesn't disappoint. And while all of these wants are legitimate, we have to ask ourselves if they are a priority. Government budgeting seems like a daunting subject, yet truthfully it is easily compared to the management of money in systems like businesses and even families. In fact, the word economy is rooted deep in Greek and Roman culture, oikonomos, and originally meant household manager. The basic principles we use to manage our own spending and develop budgets for our family are the same principles which should be used in developing and balancing a city budget. Simply put, we need to look at our expenses and make sure they do not exceed our income, and from there, we can prioritize and separate our wants from our needs. City services, law enforcement, and first responders, infrastructure, as well as maintenance of current city parks, should remain at the top of the city's priority list. The importance of each of these needs requires a city council that will take time to invest in developing a plan to handle them well. When planning, the council should always, 1, look back, evaluate costs and outcomes of past budgets, see what worked and what didn't. 2, look down, identify current revenue, plan accordingly, and always look at prioritized outcomes. 3, look ahead, identify future needs and expenses, not only looking straight ahead, but also around the corner in anticipation of unforeseen challenges or opportunities. The city has taken several steps to catch up on infrastructure maintenance, as well as invest in new projects that will facilitate growth. The road bond that will be completed this year and the new water tower on the northeast side of town are both examples of measures taken to address maintenance and development. Regardless of downturns, the city cannot afford to scale back investment into infrastructure projects. Slow and steady investment in times of boom and bust will ensure that we never get to a point where we are lagging too far behind when another population explosion occurs. Just like budgeting at home, once needs have been met and bills have been paid, the city can use remaining revenue to address the wants of the city. This is where quality of place initiatives fit in with a fiscally responsible council. Current public-private partnerships, as well as park conservancies, have alleviated a good amount of the financial burden, as well as management concerns from local government. These kinds of partnerships are the only way Midland can tackle large-scale park initiatives until we are completely caught up on infrastructure maintenance. Quality of life means a lot of things to different people, and we won't be able to make everyone happy, but we have a duty to connect with Midland's residents and craft a clearly stated and well-defined set of community priorities, so there is little room for misinterpretation. Transparency and easy-to-understand language concerning costs and the impact of city services and initiatives will go a long way in building trust with citizens. Residents will gain a true appreciation for the many functions of the city and its programs when they have access to the full picture. Toward the end of September, Southwest Airlines announced a new direct flight from Midland to Austin starting next year. It's not a city service, but I imagine a lot of people here think a new direct flight to a new destination improves their quality of life. That effort was led by local leaders and community organizations, and those are areas where the city can step up and be involved in promoting our community to businesses and service providers with little or no cost to taxpayers to provide new and exciting opportunities for residents. Midland is known for the great people who live here. They are kind and hospitable. They are generous and helpful. They are full of ingenuity and ready to fight for what they believe. It's time our surroundings, our environment, and our energy correspond with the character of our people. Prioritizing our needs alongside our vision for our city, we can and will make great strides in creating a story surrounding Midland that will not only draw people here, but keep them here for generations. PoolForCityCouncil.com. Spencer Robnett, at-large candidate. Funding sources available for parks. The City of Midland is in a challenging situation regarding the proper funding and maintenance of the parks across our city. There is clearly public demand and council desire to improve the parks and recreation opportunities in Midland. If you ask every council member today where their top three priorities lie, I would be willing to bet they all have parks on their list. We have ample park and open space in this town, but not always the budget to properly maintain and upgrade what we have. Unfortunately, between fully funding our police and fire departments and replacing aging infrastructure, too often our parks budget comes up short. Since I was elected in 2014, though, we have invested $47 million into our parks system, including more than $15 million from private or non-City of Midland sources. If elected, I will continue to make parks investments as much of a budget priority for the city as possible, and will use the below sources to do so. In 2017, our community voted against a repurposed 4B sales tax that would have provided up to $10 million annually for park maintenance and renovation. Now that the hospital has successfully secured that sales tax to fund their operations, the city will have to look to other sources to fund growing park demand. Luckily, recent public-private partnership success at Centennial Park in downtown Midland has sparked forward-thinking conversations about how to fund and operate our major parks projects. This project did not happen overnight, though, and took close to 4 years from inception to grand opening. This same public-private co-investment is being applied to the planning and community fundraising efforts for the new Hogan Park as well. The roughly $50 million Hogan Park project will likely see participation from the local nonprofit community, private donors, and Midland County. Foundation and private support should not always be counted on to make up this funding gap, though. And if the city is going to ask for participation across the entities listed above, we need to make sure we have a plan for the ongoing maintenance and proper management and scheduling of these parks as well. In our most recent budget, the City Council allocated all oil and gas royalty revenue to our Parks Special Projects Fund. Depending on oil prices and production, this could mean allocating another $1 to $2 million per year into our parks and green spaces. A majority of this revenue is derived from city-owned minerals underneath our parks system, and it makes perfect sense to reinvest those same funds back into our parks. Another source of funding the city is evaluating for parks is hotel-motel tax revenue. A limited allowed use for these funds from overnight travelers to Midland includes parks and recreation facilities that promote the local hotel-motel industry. Expect to see this council in the next year make investments into tournament-grade soccer, football, baseball, and softball facilities with these funds, and work alongside the local hotel-motel industry to promote their use. The reallocation of these funds is to be determined, but you could easily see another $1 to $2 million annually being invested into our parks system from this source. I am proud to have represented the City of Midland as an at-large councilman for the last 7.5 years, and would appreciate the opportunity to serve again. There are 2 at-large council seats open in this election, and I respectfully ask for 1 of your 2 votes. If I can speak to your group or you want to know more about our campaign, I can be reached on my cell phone, 432-553-8545, or at spencer@robnet4midland.com.
New neighbors are quick to draw the line. Dear Abby for Tuesday. Dear Abby, when the house next door sold, we were delighted to have new neighbors. My husband and I greeted them with a welcome gift. They asked us 3 times about the property line, and we showed them the marker. They asked the people on the other side, as well as those in the back of them. Shortly after, they put a barrier between us and a fence at the other property line. Now they have installed stakes and a string so everyone will know where their property is. They seem to be obsessed with property lines, and they keep to themselves. When my husband mows the lawn, they stand outdoors watching to make sure he stays on our property. It's very uncomfortable to be outside when they are. When they are on their deck, I feel like an intruder, so I don't go out on my deck anymore. We have no children and mind our own business. We have great relationships with our other neighbors. It's sad having such standoffish neighbors. They treat everyone in the neighborhood this way. I love our neighborhood. However, it's uncomfortable having semi-friendly people next door. Abby, what say you about such friendly yet unfriendly neighbors? They make it plain that they don't want anyone putting a foot on their property. Unhappy next door. Dear Unhappy, your new neighbors, for whatever reasons, are antisocial. When they come out to watch your husband mow the lawn, he should give them a friendly wave and concentrate on what he's doing. If you feel that by using your deck you are intruding on them, install plants or some other barrier to shelter you from their view. It is important for your own sake that you teach yourself to accept this couple for who they are rather than who you would like them to be. Dear Abby, I've been married for 38 years and have 3 grown kids and 3 grandkids. My wife is a teacher and my kids are doing well. I have always been unfaithful throughout the marriage. My wife and kids suspect it, but none of them say anything about it. I can't live like this anymore. I feel very guilty, and I want to move to another country, my home country. Should I tell my wife about all my affairs, that I'm seeing someone else and that I don't want to be with her? Reddy in New Jersey. Dear Reddy, and what's the alternative? Would it be that you will change your ways, forego the philandering you have engaged in for the last 38 years of your marriage, and remain in the U.S.? Somehow I doubt it. Yes, you should level with your wife, and when you do, do not delude yourself into thinking she'll be pleased to hear her marriage has been a lie from the beginning, and don't expect your children to respect you for the choices you have made and are making. You owe it to your wife to ensure that she will be financially secure after you go galloping off. Considering what you are planning, it may be the only way you'll be able to look yourself in the eye when you groom yourself every day.
Would a copper-infused mask be effective against the flu or COVID-19? Dear Dr. Roach, would a copper-infused mask be effective against the flu or COVID-19? J.A. Answer. All masks reduce transmission of COVID-19. Masks have variable effectiveness for the wearer, but may be more important to stop transmission from the wearer if they are infected and don't know it. The best mask remains the N95 mask, but surgical masks and fabric masks made from 2 layers of cotton and 1 layer of synthetic material provided outstanding protection. Copper has antiviral properties, but it is not clear whether adding copper to a mask makes it more effective. I think the type of material used and how well it fits are more important than whether there is copper inside it.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.